Siman Taf Resh Gimel, in between Hilchas Rosh Hashanah, Hilchas Yom Kippur, to Ramah Paskins. For right now, for this week, Aseres Mei Tshuva, Yesh La'adam Chaladam L'chapes L'fash Peish B'masav. A Jew during these days needs to peer inside of his penimius. A Jew these days needs to sit down with himself and look in the mirror, literally, figuratively, and get an honest taking stock of what I've been doing well and what needs fixing.
What's Rebbe's policy on readers?
So the Ramah speaks about the need for every Jew to engage in cheshbon nefesh, the need for every Jew, particularly during Aseres Mei Tshuva, to take an honest look in the mirror and to take stock of what I'm doing well at and what needs fixing. The Mishnah Berurah goes on to quote the Rush. The Rush speaks specifically about learning of Rabbeinu Yonah Zigeres HaTshuva. Rabbeinu Yonah lived the generation before the Rush. The Rush was a contemporary of the Rashba, and Rabbeinu Yonah is one of the Rabbeim of the Rashba. And the Mishnah Berurah goes on to quote that the truth is that both the Arizal and the Vilna Gaon speak about the value of learning Sifrei Musar throughout the year. The Rambam Mishnah Berurah does not quote this, but if you open up Rambam, the very beginning of Hilchas Deis, several halachas into the first paragraph of Hilchas Deis, the Rambam speaks about the need for a Jew to engage in ongoing cheshbon nefesh. It cuts against the grain of the impression, the misimpression some of us have, of the Rambam as a disembodied intellectual. The Rambam was certainly an intellectual. The Rambam certainly was a great rationalist. He did not see that at all as at odds with having extraordinary focus on Tikkun HaMidos, which the Rambam saw as a mitzvah in the Torah, the mitzvah of Lachta B'drachav. The Rambam speaks extensively and intensively about both goals and methods in terms of sharpening and polishing one's midos and one's character. Mishnah Berurah in Sif Katan Gimel goes on to send you to a particular Maramakam. He says, hey, take a look in the Chayadam. Sim Klal Kuf Mem Gimel, he gets up to Hilchus Yom Kippur. He has a beautiful treatment. Someone actually came over to me in Shul yesterday after davening. Says he was grateful that I had once mentioned him this Chayadam in passing. And he said he's been using it for the last couple of years, Aseres Mei Tshuva, and he's found it to be very rich. So maybe you'll find it rich as well. It is the Mishnah Berurah's suggestion. Chayadam is, Chayadam talks about Tshuva is really remarkably good. Now the Mishnah Berurah in Sivkat and Dalid goes on, based on the Bar Heitev, to give you a list of some pretty severe scenarios for which a Jew might, Rachamon Litzlan, need to do Tshuva. He talks about scenarios where a person made an irresponsible decision and someone else lost their life as a result. Now, how do you do tshuva for that? He talks about scenarios where a person willingly engaged in eating machalos asuros. He talks about some pretty severe, heavy situations. If a person is carrying that type of heavy situation, there are obviously some things to address. But those are rarities. And there's a fantastic counterpoint in the Ramah himself. The Ramah, after speaking, here in Siman Taf Resh Gimel, after saying sort of the prescriptively, programmatically, that every Jew needs to engage in self-reflection during Aseres Mei Tshuva, he goes on to give you one Dvar Musar. Almost like this is the paradigmatic Musar Shmuz. This is the paradigmatic Vart. And it's the following. It's based on Rabbeinu Yonah. We just mentioned Rabbeinu Yonah moments ago. He's Igeres HaTshuva, even more famous for his Share Tshuva. We're going to be meeting Rabbeinu Yonah this year extensively in his Aliyos to Rabbeinu Yonah, his Sefer Chidush on Maseches Bava Basra. We have a running commentary of Rabbeinu Yonah on the Rif on Brachas. Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah on Brachas is sort of a cross between the two. It's Lamedus on the Masechta and Halacha L'Maaseh the Masechta, but the nature of Maseches Brachas is such that Lamedus about Kriya Shema often carries, Lamedus about Tefillah will often carry with it very overt Hashkafic content and Musar content as well. So the official Dvar Musar that the Ramah quotes is the following idea from Ben Yonah and Brachas. He says, it starts with Kachim. But stop me if you spoke about this last week. Did you talk about a Chatzis and Asher last week? No. So a Jew violates, you know that there are over 30 Averis in which the Torah prescribes an onish of Kares. If Rechman Litzlan, a Jew, violates any of those Averis. The Arayos, a handful of Machalos, Asuras, a couple of other very severe Averis, Avodah Zarah and murder and so on and so forth. Chil Shabbos, a Jew violates any of these Averis. In Shamayim, the punishment is Kares. Opening Mishnah, Maseches Krisis tells us that those cases where you all the lavin for which your chayiv kares, if you violate them, b'mezid, so a Jew violates them b'shogeg, what carbon does he need to bring? Carbon chatos. Okay. As an aside, that's an indication that the fact that I was not intentional in my avera is not in and of itself absolve me for culpability. I do bear a certain amount of responsibility for being irresponsible enough that I accidentally did avers. Otherwise, if I bear no responsibility when I do b'shogeg, then we no need for carbon cost. Obviously, much less, much, much less. There's something irresponsibility. I need to be proactively responsible as a mature Jew. Okay. But now, the following twist. So if a Jew, Rachman, let's talk about Shabbos b'shogeg, he has to bring a carbon chatas. A Jew ate chalev, hind quarter fat of a kosher animal, b'shogeg, he has to bring a carbon chatas. Okay. Let's say he's not sure. He didn't intend to do any of it, right? Afterwards he realized he may not have violated chil Shabbos. Or perhaps easier to formulate, he may not have eaten chalev b'shogeg. If a Jew thought this was kosher meat, he eats it. After he finds out, no, that was actually chalev, carbon chatas. But if there were two pieces of meat on the table, and I thought they were both kosher, I picked up one of them indiscriminately and ate it, and afterwards I find the other one gets thrown out. Afterwards I find out that one of those two was chalev, the other one was kosher. So it's a suffix whether I did an aveir b'shogeg. It could be I ate the one which was chalev, or it could be ate the one which was kosher. The other one was thrown out. I can't do any forensic analysis. I may or may not have eaten chalev b'shogeg. What carbon do I bring then? You know. Asham tali. Very good. Asham tali. Asham because you're tali, because you're hanging. You're not sure whether or not you violated an avera b'shogeg, violated a chiyuv karis. So I do avera b'vadai, carbon chatas. Do avera b'shogeg, carbon asham, asham tali. Which one do you think costs more? A chatas or an asham? What do you say? You think, right? Why?
Because you're not sure
that's what Chaim says logically. It should cost you more. It should hit you in the wallet more to do an to do tshuva for a vaday. Ironically, though, it's not the case. There is no minimum cost for carbon chatas. You went on eBay, you bought a used animal, huh? You bought an animal on the cheap, you got a great deal. There's no minimum cost for the animal that you use for a carbon chatas. There is a minimum cost for the animal you use for a carbon. Asham has to be shtei kesef. Hello, davarhu. It costs me more to bring an asham tali than to bring carbon chatas. Chaim made a very good point. Logically, it should be more for the vada than for the suffix. What's talk of the pshat? Says it in Yonah. There's a psychological angle here. Because, in theory, legally, it sounds like you need more tshuva for the vadai than for the suffix. But if you think about the way we operate as people, so, and it says, if I know I did something, if it's clear that I did something wrong, sooner or later I would have to confront it. Thinking, well, maybe I'll figure out how to deny it for myself. But likely, sooner or later, I'm going to realize, okay, this is a hot path to get over. But if I'm not even sure if I did something wrong, hey, it could be I ate the chalev, or it could be what I ate was kosher, and the chalev had the garbage. Once it's a suffix avera, it's in our minds easier to sort of absolve ourselves. No, that was really okay. Maybe it was really okay. There's always that mental backup. So I need to invest myself more. Mischaret yoser, kishiyodeh sha'asa. If I recognize, if it's definite I did something wrong, so I'm going to have to grapple with it. But if it's something that maybe I did, maybe I didn't, so that's going to take more work. So that's the sort of the counterpoint that I was saying to what the heavy list the Mishnah Brewer gives in Sifkat and Dalet of Arayos and Machalos Asuros and fatal lethal irresponsibility is the averis that appear to us to be not so serious often require more work to address in a substantive productive way. But this is a real din. This is a real din. This is real Judaism 101. This is not like a lefnim meshurat hadin. The need to actually work on doing tshuva during this time period. That means you sit down and think and figure out and plan what needs improving. That's why in Siman Taref Reish Vav they talk about, based on Mishnayos, the end of the last parak of Yuma, to be mafayis people. We've all heard this before. You've heard it as little children. At some point you have to realize like this is something you actually should do. You've heard since you're a little kid. The Mishnah says, Avesh Ve'al Ma'akom, you do tshuva, take it up with the Rebbeinu Shlom. Avesh Ve'al Chadera, before you take it with the Rebbeinu Shlom, you have to first take it up with the person whom you wronged. You've probably heard that for well over a decade. But it's actually something you're supposed to do, as in, no, I'm serious. In other words, to actually sit down, not just to like go over to people in shul 5 minutes before for davening starts. On the way out of yeshiva, let's say, Michael. Look real, like figure out. You want to do that as well, kol kavod. But to think about, like, are there one or two or three people that over the course of the last couple months, I hurt them, whether by omission or by commission, whether I said something, I did something that was hurtful. Maybe I did, hopefully I didn't mean it to be hurtful and it was just sort of bad judgment, or maybe I, in the moment, did mean to be hurtful and unfortunately succeeded at being hurtful. Or by omission. It wasn't what I did, it was what I didn't do. I left someone out, I forgot someone, I didn't reach out, whatever it is, and someone is hurt because of me. So, real Judaism 101, this is a Siman Shulchan Aruch, it's a Mishnah, it's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us, to think about, are there people in my life that I really hurt, that I baveled, and I should pick up the phone, ideally go over to them, or pick up the phone. This is not a text. This is like actually reaching out. Like going over and extending yourself and saying, or when all else fails, so then go to the store and buy a card and take a pen. Ah, this is the larger site for other times as well. But there's a world of difference between writing someone a card and sending them a text or even sending them an email. Because when you get a card, we'll discuss this more in 4 years from now. But when you get a text is cheap and quick. So it has its usefulness, but it conveys usually very little information. But also, unlike a voice note, texts are very easily misunderstood. Especially if it's more than just technical data, like where and when, it's so easy to there's no cadence and there's no inflection. You don't hear the voice. So it happens so often that someone takes a text differently, the recipient takes a text differently than it was meant. It's useful for like a shopping list, a text. Yeah, so you need to know like what three things to pick up from the store. That's great. Or just remind me where's the bar mitzvah again and what time does it start, when's it called for. Like technical data, useful. But anything that's more multidimensional than that, you want a more multidimensional, richer way of communicating. Plus, particularly if you're reaching out to mend a relationship, you're reaching out to repair things, so you don't inspire. If you just do that which is very easy for you and minimal effort, so that doesn't really convey to the other person that A, you feel bad, B, that you're beginning to think empathically about how it hit them and how they experienced it, and you're beginning to realize that it was hurtful to them, and that you truly feel bad about it, and that you're trying to repair things. All of those will be conveyed, perhaps, if you get out of your comfort zone and actually reach out. So, Yeah. To text someone, "Are you mochel me?" is rarely going to be effective. They may say yes. They may say yes, but the point isn't to get a yes. The point is to actually achieve what you're trying to achieve. Chaim, you've been waiting very patiently.
Going back to that from calling.
Sure.
The answer is that saying that if you knew, if you were paying attention, then you would know if you actually did the Avera.
He's saying, if I know I did the Avera, I'm more likely to get to tshuva than if I'm not even sure I did the Avera. Because if I know I did the Avera, so sooner or later, I'm probably going to have to recognize I did this wrong, and I need to confront it. It's easier to, I mean, people, human beings have plenty of capacity to self-deceive and to avoid things, even when they are definitely true. But it's, I'm more likely to end up confronting what I did wrong if it's incontrovertible that I did it wrong. But if it's not even clear whether I did was wrong or right, it's that much easier to just ignore it and not confront it. Well, anyways, maybe it wasn't even us, sir. It wasn't so bad. The games we play with ourselves. So that's what I was saying before. In a vacuum. Yeah, that's Rabino's kasha. In a vacuum, a vada requires more tshuva than a suffix. So it makes sense to be investing yourself, even literally, like financially investing yourself more in tshuva for a vada than tshuva for a suffix. But we look at it from a psychological angle, as Rabino does, well, but in terms of the work of a ultimately, as Rambam keeps reminding us in the first parak of Hilchos Tshuva, as the carbon works together with vidui and tshuva. Whatever other tools you're using to get kapara, but it's together with, layered on top of the core, which is vidui and tshuva. You need to get to that vidui and tshuva. You need to get to the hakar sachet to recognize here's a weakness of mine and here's how I want to address it and grow forward and move forward. So that hakar sachet is going to be more difficult to come to. That honesty with self is going to be more difficult to come to when there's in my mind a way out. Well, maybe I'm doing it. Yeah. Yes, a call is definitely better than a text. Cards are sometimes useful. Cards are useful sometimes in positive contexts, in positive, healthy, warm relationships. There's value sometimes to sending a card, in addition to conversation. And sometimes in difficult situations, cards are useful. In a difficult situation, sometimes it could be very hard for people to reopen. If there's a relationship that's gone seriously sour, siblings that haven't spoken to each other in a couple of years, friends that haven't spoken to each other in a couple of months. So sometimes it can be very hard to come and say, I was wrong, I should have reached out months ago, I really feel bad. That's usually the best thing to do, but sometimes it's too hard, so then send a card. Plus, sometimes you're worried that you're not going to act, that when you actually come to the person, you're going to be so overwrought, or he or she will be so overwrought, or reawakening all sorts of tensions. You worry you're not actually going to effectively say all the things you want to say. So sometimes a card is better because you have a chance to think, you have a chance to write and rewrite, and the person, the recipient, has a chance to process it. They don't have to press it all in real time. They have a chance to read it and to think what you said. And even they might, if feelings are very raw, you might reach out and they'll just be so upset to see you, they're not even going to hear what you're saying. But if you get a card, getting a card will cause less of an eruption on the recipient's end and will give the recipient more time to process and to think about how they want to respond. Plus, the other mile of a written card is that it before you even read what the card says, you get a written card that tells you right away that someone cared enough. It wasn't just like in the moment, oh, I bumped into him, let me say something. Someone took the time to actually go to the store, buy a card, write a card, and send a card. This was clearly premeditated. This wasn't just spur of the moment. This is someone actually cares enough to do this. Which which is can be a very valuable, meaningful message, both in a positive context. You want to tell someone how much they mean to you. It's shown a couple of years from now, when you'll be seeking to figure out who your best friend for life will be. So, in addition to conversation, sending a card is a very powerful message. I'm actually invested in this relationship. It wasn't just in the moment that says something nice. Like I took the time to write a card. And that's Leo and Vod, with your mitzvah, I'm a best, hopefully a best friend for life. Cards play a powerful role. And in a negative situation, you try to repair things. So sometimes a card, for all those reasons, sometimes a written word, but really written word, is has unique power. Together with conversation. Sometimes it's the entree to a conversation. Maybe the card will end. If you're open to it, I'd love to get together to talk stuff through. After you write everything else you write about how you, and when you're reflecting on what you did and you feel so bad and you misunderstood, whatever you're going to say, you have a chance to that. And then it could be an invitation to let's get together to talk. Let me know when's a good time to get together. So sometimes it's the way to go. Yeah.
Like you don't know, you want to.
Again, let me be clear. I'm not saying it's evil to text.
No, I'm
nothing
not
wrong. It just may not be effective. And if you're texting someone whom you actually ba'aveled in a serious way, so that could be pouring salt in the wounds. Like, here's a guy who, like, you ruined his reputation, you trashed his business, then you go over to another kid, even verbally, oh, brother, you're mocking me, right? That's worse than nothing. That's like trivializing his pain. So the same is true. If you text a guy in a shallow way, or you go talk to him in a casual way, but yeah, okay, that may be, right. But it would be even more effective, instead of crowdsourcing your cheshma nefesh, which essentially is what that is, it would be even more effective, it would be far more meaningful to actually do the cheshma nefesh oneself. Instead of asking everyone else, you know, what do you think I should do in tshuva for? How about actually sit down with myself? Which, again, is something that in any era, I think, is something that required a practice. To actually get comfortable sitting with oneself and thinking without doing anything, just thinking. That's something I think in any era required practice. Perhaps, maybe in our era requires even more practice. It's hard to know to what extent, you know, hard to know to what extent recent technological advances have made self-reflection less common. That message is out there. There have always been ways to distract yourself. But it may be the case that big tech has certainly tuned and optimized the devices in our pockets, the phones in our pockets. They're optimized to keep you constantly flowing with low-level dopamine shots. A little bit here, a little bit there. Phones are definitely optimized to get you out of the zone of sort of extended self-reflection. That's certainly true. That's not to say that in previous generations, that back in Europe, everyone did cheshva nefesh for an hour at a time without a problem. That's not the case. But it certainly is the case. Whatever's going on in previous generations, it definitely is true. That sitting with yourself and thinking about an idea, and certainly thinking about myself for 5, 10, 15 minutes, is something that requires practice. Okay. And is well worth the practice. So crowdsourcing your cheshbon nefesh may be a good add-on, but I wouldn't make that the core of one's cheshbon. The core of cheshbon nefesh is, but use your phone. If you use your phone if you use Google Calendar or whatever other calendar app you use, if you're in that zone, so adrabah, make an appointment with yourself for cheshbon nefesh. Decide one or two slots between now and Erev Yom Kippur, and I'm going to sit down with a pen and paper for 15 minutes and make cheshbon nefesh. And cheshbon nefesh shouldn't be morose, and it shouldn't be gloomy. It's, let's think honestly, I should think about one or two or three things I've been done a good job at, and one, two or three things that need fixing. And then to figure out how I want to address the things that need fixing. So this is one major area of the halachas of Esrei Yisrael Tshuva and Yom Kippur, is doing tshuva. Maybe next time, tomorrow, we'll pick up with what some have said is their favorite or second favorite mitzvah in the Torah, and that is the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. So it's a fascinating din. It's rooted in a very curious word in the Chumash. It's one of the solutions to an incredibly curious word in Chumash. One of the solutions is there must be a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And we'll spend a few minutes exploring it, Blin Eder, tomorrow morning, and we'll find there actually is a fair amount of halachic richness, a fair amount of lumdus, and it's lumdus that flows right into very, very fascinating and hopefully very practical machshava as well. So we'll pick up with that in Mitzvah Shem tomorrow morning.